Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back. This is episode 329. We've got a great show for you this week. I do want to quick mention our good friend Levi Banker, who just started a new product line over at Banker's Best. So Levi and I worked together on coming up with a cool product. He did for us the King Solomon's Reserve Beard Oil, and then we made a beard balm, and he worked and did all the legwork on this. Even the artwork on the bottle is done by a Mason, and it's a really great product, as well as everything he carries. But recently, guys, he just launched a really cool new product. If you have a goatee or a beard, you know sometimes that if you are taking care of it and buying a specialty brand shampoo for a beard, like a beard wash, and it could be like $20 to get this kind of stuff sometimes, and that's wild and crazy. So I thought it was great because Levi actually just produced their first shampoo. It's Grove Shampoo and Beard Wash. So it's an all-natural shampoo and beard wash formulated to clean hair and the beard while moisturizing the skin, which everybody knows is super important, especially if you have a beard and it's wintertime or skin gets dry. So check that out. Go over to buybankersbest.com, click through our links to get there, and use your promo code BBWCY357 and go ahead and pick it up. The price on it is $15, which is a deal because instead of paying $20 for both, you're paying $15 for one. And this is an 8-ounce bottle. It's also done by a brother, and you're helping out this show. So pretty great deal for everybody all around. Check out that new product and show some love. So last week, or the week before, I had mentioned the MSA has this list of seven wonders of the Masonic world. And they asked everybody to get on their Facebook group and go ahead and put up your list of your seven wonders of the Masonic world. And so if you are on Facebook, you could go to the Masonic Services Association of North America, and you have to join the group. And once you're in the group, they have some pretty good conversation, and there's some great insights as to what they do for all of us, and they talk about some of their books and the Short Talk Bulletin Audio Online Library, which is where they read some of the Short Talk Bulletins, like podcasts, like I've done for you in the past, episodes. On their Facebook page, it says, one would be hard-pressed to limit what their seven wonders of the Masonic world would be. Certainly the George Washington Masonic National Memorial and the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania building in Philadelphia are at the top of most everyone's list. MSA Notes would like to hear your list of the seven Masonic wonders. List them here in the Masonic Services Association Facebook group site. Remember, you have to first ask to be a member of the group to post. Now that's taken from the actual MSA Notes, and it was posted in their Facebook group. And I was going to read you some of the responses that were on the page itself, but it looks like they've either been removed or something has gone wrong to where I can't see what they are anymore. I am a member of the group, so I'm not entirely sure what's going on there. However, when I was making my list, I was thinking about interesting buildings that captured my imagination, as well as the architecture being kind of stunning. And so the word wonders of the Masonic world made me think about things that are more than just maybe architecture or more than just fantastic looking. So I'm going to give you my top 10 instead of 7, and I'll go 10 to 1. So number 10 was the Grand Lodge of Sweden. I saw some great pictures of that online. Look them up. It's really crazy. Number 9, the Mackay Masonic Temple in Mackay Region, Queensland, Australia. It's situated in an interesting spot, and it's kind of sticks out, so it's pretty interesting. Number 8 is the Grand Lodge of Massachusetts. When you get to the top floor and they tell you the story about the ceiling, it's pretty amazing, and that to me is a Masonic wonder. Number 7, the Detroit Masonic Temple. Number 6 is a split. So the Newport Tower of Rhode Island. And if you're a Mason and you're like, oh, I saw that on Brother Scott Walter's show, yada, 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 I don't know if that's Masonic. If you've been to the Grand Lodge of Rhode Island, you'll be sold that it's kind of Masonic. And because there's some conjecture there, I'll put a slash and I'll say the other thing for number 6 would be the Valley of Indianapolis. I've heard it's huge and amazing. I've been told it's the biggest valley. So that qualifies to me. Number 5 is Roslyn Chapel. Now, while it may not be explicitly Masonic, it certainly has its place in Masonic lore, in pop culture, and many of the visitors to Roslyn Chapel are Freemasons. Number 4, the George Washington National Masonic Memorial. Number 3, the House of the Temple in Washington, D.C. Number 2 is the Ruined Temple in Harper, Liberia. You gotta Google it. It's pretty intense looking, pretty cool. And my number 1 was the Pompeii Masonic Ruins. Now, some of you may be thinking, ruins in Pompeii, what? And I've covered it on several topics, you know, way back in the beginning of this show. There were Masonic ruins found in Pompeii. There was a lodge. It was, of course, an operative lodge. However, that doesn't mean it wasn't Masonic. In fact, the sign above the door means Diogenes the Mason, and inside were mosaic reliefs of Masonic things like a skull, a plum, a level. And this was all done in like the tile work. It's really fascinating. So you can look that up also. Brother Toddy Creason did a piece on it a few years back, quite a few years ago, 4 or 5 probably. And you can read a little bit about it. And the temple dates from 70 CE. So it's pretty intense, pretty cool, pretty old. But that was my number 1. I thought we could just go through those very quickly and maybe we would connect on a few of our top Masonic wonders. So I have a few things for you this week. The first thing I wanted to read was actually an excerpt from a book. The quote that I'm going to read you is as follows, and comes from The Meaning of Masonry by W.L. Wilmshurst. The order is a semi-secret, semi-public institution, secret in respect of its activities, but otherwise of full public notoriety, with its doors open to any applicant for admission who is of ordinary good character and repute. Those who enter it, as the majority do, entirely ignorant of what they will find there, usually because they have friends there or know Masonry to be an institution devoted to high ideals and benevolence, and with which it may be socially desirable to be connected, may or may not be attracted and profit by what is disclosed to them, and may or may not see anything beyond the bare form of the symbol, or hear anything beyond the mere letter of the word. Their admission is quite a lottery. Their initiation too often remains but a formality, not an actual awakening into the order and quality of life previously unexperienced. Their membership, unless such an awakening eventually ensues from the careful study and faithful practice of the order's teaching, has little, if any, greater influence upon them than would ensue from their joining a purely social club. End quote. Now, that quote really stuck out with me for a number of reasons, mostly because I had written a piece a while back called The Great Half-Truth, The Inner Circle of Masonry for the Midnight Freemasons. If you'd like, you can go look that one up. I can put a link back to it in our show notes. However, I wrote it quite a long time ago, and what I can tell you is that there is an inner group of Freemasonry, and it's not exactly what you think, but maybe it is on some level, and that is when like-minded individuals meet up at a lodge and they kind of self-discover that maybe there's something they're both interested in, and more gentlemen start meeting and talking about these things, and before you know it, you've got a cadre of gentlemen who now meet for any number of reasons on off-lodge nights together, and it is an invitation-only thing. There are other invitational-only bodies like the 33rd Degree, AMD, Red Cross Constantine, SRICF. These are all inner circle organizations, so there's nothing inherently wrong with them, but I would just point out that there is an inner circle, and I thought that W.L. Wilmshurst's quote from The Meaning of Masonry was apropos. Next up, I just want to mention the Hautgrade Academy on the Scottish Rite. It looks like there was some great conversation happening about that on the Winding Stairs Freemasonry group. However, it hasn't quite launched yet, although I saw some screenshots that I can't seem to access. So I am still a member of the Northern Jurisdiction. I actually re-upped my membership with them. I'm still also Southern Jurisdiction, but I re-upped my membership with the Northern Jurisdiction when I heard they launched an educational program, and I thought that was fantastic. So if you're like me, go over to ScottishRiteNMJ.org and sign up for a newsletter that will let you know when you can start the academy. The next piece I'm going to read to you is just an excerpt from a short article on MasonicWorld.com, and it's called The Russian Initiation into a Masonic Lodge from back in 1815. I'm not going to read the entire piece because I think that's for the Mason to read, and it's really interesting, and I hope that what I start to read for you makes you think and go look look this one up. I'll put a link to the article within our show notes. On the 14th of June, 1815, after dinner at 6 o'clock, de Vav, a courier drove me to a lodge of Freemasons. I was shown into a chamber where I had to wait for over an hour until the conclusion of the ceremony of initiation of another profane, Prince G.M. Odevsky. Then a man entered, attired in ordinary evening dress. He bandaged my eyes and conducted me through a number of rooms, suddenly be stopped. I heard a great noise of bolts, creaking of gates, and we stepped over a threshold of a door. The conductor put me in a chair and said, "When I have left, take off the bandages and give yourself up to the study of the book which lies before you." The creak of the door and the noise of bolts informed me that he had left. I took off the bandage. Black walls of a gloomy cavern surrounded me. By a dim light of a lamp which hung over my head, my eyes met a skull, and near it, an open Bible on a blue cushion of velvet, trimmed with gold. Above me, the shimmering light also showed a skull with two crossbones, and the inscription, "Memento Mori." I took the Book of Faith and read silently. At these words, the door opened, and a man holding a drawn sword appeared. Round his neck was a broad blue ribbon from which a golden triangle was suspended, a similar triangle, but much smaller, on a red ribbon trimmed with silver adorned the left side of his breast. He gravely asked me in French, "What is your intention in entering the fraternity of Freemasons?" I replied, "To discover the secret path to knowledge of truth." "What is truth?" "An attribute of the original cause which gives a moment to the whole of the universe." Before we move on, I just want to remind everybody to please consider going to wcypodcast.com, hover over support the show, and check out any number of the ways you can help support this program. We have a few really great ways to do that. Number one, you can, of course, make a direct donation to the program, becoming a producer of the program, which will take a monthly donation. But there are several different tiers that you can choose to do that and help out keep this program alive and make all the episodes available all the time for everybody. So please consider doing that. Other alternative ways to do that are to buy a show pin, lapel pin, which is our exclusive design and that you can't get anywhere else. The symbology behind it is intense. I would encourage you to head on over to wcypodcast.com, click on that link, read that for yourself so that you can be equally as impressed. Some other ways, of course, we do have Banker's Best. So if you go to buybankersbest.com or click through our links, use that promo code at checkout and you'll get a percentage off your order. We also have a great partnership with Onnit Labs, so if you click through our links, use promo code WCY for 10% off there as well. We have a Thrive account. There's all these ways to help out this program, and I just want to put that out there and thank our monthly contributors and those out there who are assisting our show in its production. And I have another piece for you, but just before I get to that, I did want to mention our good friend Chris Hodapp over on his blog, freemasonsfordummies.blogspot.com. He has a great post about his new book, Heritage Endures, which is the perspectives on 200 years of Indiana Freemasonry. It's a fantastic book. Indiana Masons are definitely loving it. Again, it is a book that is specifically about Indiana. However, Indiana has that rich heritage, and I think anybody who's a history buff on anything Masonic definitely would get a great read out of it. He also mentions last week about the upcoming Masonic education seminars that are coming. So the first one he mentions is the Grand Lodge of New Jersey's 2018 Winter Seminar, which happened, if you're listening to this on Sunday, January 28th, it happened yesterday. So I hope it was well attended. It looked to be a very cool event. Another one that's coming up is Friday, March 9th and Saturday, March 10th, Masonic Lodge Symposium at Dayton Masonic Center in Dayton, Ohio looks to be pretty amazing as well. The symposium is going to be designed to offer the participants a look at how five lodges have approached the challenges of practicing Freemasonry in the 21st century. So they have multiple presenters. You can check that out on his website. And of course, he also mentions MasonicCon 2018, which is happening in April out in Attleboro, Massachusetts at Ezekiel Bates Lodge. This is one of the best things I've ever been to, even though I was speaking at the event. I have to say, even if I wasn't speaking there, this was a fantastic event. Speakers that are going to be this year is Nathan Tweedy, Brother Ryan Flynn will be out, we've got Doc Perry, Tyler Beebe, Alex Gardner, John Ruark will be there, Angel Millar will be there again, myself, Mike Jarzabek, just a lot of great stuff. And of course, there's going to be some Masonic workshops and things happening in Alberta, Canada, Camp Masonry in Toledo, Ohio, I'll be there, and Texas Masonic Con in Fort Worth in September. So lots of great stuff is happening, and I think if you can make something happen in your area, get the word out and spread it, because people love going to these events. Vendors and Masonic speakers and people can get together and really share fellowship. So check it out. And again, for a list of all that, go to freemasonsfordummies.blogspot.com and check out Chris's website. It's probably the best. The next piece I have for you is called The Five Noble Orders of Architecture, and it's by Pierce J. George. Brother Pierce George is a member of Manum Lodge number 97, Grand Lodge, South Australia. He says, "Our rituals, as a general rule, are reasonably straightforward and self-explanatory, but on occasion, some matters are only touched upon briefly and in consequence can leave one puzzled about their full meanings. One such matter is the phrase, quote, Five Hold a Lodge in allusion to the five noble orders of architecture, namely the Tuscan, Doric, Ionic, Corinthian, and Composite," end quote. But what are the peculiarities of these different orders? First, let us look at them. Noble. A diligent search through many encyclopedias, dictionaries, books of knowledge, and books specifically relating to architecture has failed to reveal the term, and this suggests that it is only used in Masonic literature, but is not conclusive. However, Mitchell Beasley's Pocket Guide to Architecture refers to the five orders as classical orders, so it can be assumed that both of these terms are synonymous, even though it is the peculiarities of the separate orders which will be the main subject matter of this article. It is first prudent that we make a study of their similarities. Some columns, but not all, are supported by a pedestal, usually a square section. This can take the form of a square, shallow, plain block, but where a higher pedestal is used, say, up to a third of the height of the complete unit, it consists of a base, a dado, which can be plain or ornamented, and a cornice. The column proper is also divided into two or three named parts. First, the base, which is a series of annulets or ring-like moldings, the shaft and the capital, which by its design is the manner by which each order is recognized. It is interesting to note that the Greeks were the first to establish the orders and the Romans followed suit, making some alterations, modifications, and additions. We will begin by examining the details of the Doric order because it was the first to be established by the Greeks. It was the one which they employed predominantly in their buildings. The general consensus is that the column was developed from earlier wooden forms. This from the resemblance of cornice details to the forms used in early carpentry. By the 7th century BC, the type had arrived at a definite form, and subsequent improvements led to the production of the perfected order of that 5th century BCE. Examples are to be found in the Parthenon at the Propylaea at Athens, and was continual in use by the Greeks until the 2nd century BCE. An outstanding feature of the Greek Doric column is that it has no base and a more substantial shaft than the other orders. It is generally treated with 20 flutes, and it terminates in a simple cap in a group of annulets, a convex curved molding which is referred to as the achenus, and a square slab called the abacus on top. The Roman Doric was derived from the Greek, but the design was probably influenced by the appealing aspect of a more slender shaft developed by the Etruscans. This column was not frequently used, but examples may be viewed in the Colosseum and the Theater of Marcellus. The Roman Doric also differs from the Greek in that it incorporates a base and has some changes to the profile of the capital. Although departing from the principle of explaining the orders chronologically, it is fitting to introduce at this point the Tuscan order, established by the 16th century Italian. It is of comparative recent origin, a much simplified example of the Doric. It is unfluted and has no adornments on the capital. It is also known as the Roman Doric order referred to earlier. The next noble order to emerge was the Ionic, which attained full development by the 6th century BCE, primarily a creation of the artisans of Asia Minor, which is the Asian portion of Turkey, where some partially developed examples of the order have been located. It appeared in Greece in the 5th century BCE. The one complete example of Greek Ionic can be seen in the Erechtheum. This is a temple built from Pentelic marble on the Acropolis in Athens. Greek Ionic columns are slender proportioned, their height generally being about 9 times their lower diameter, and usually having 24 flutes. The capital is characterized by spiral scrolls, known as volutes. These scrolls are viewed at front and rear of the capital. The Roman Ionic differs from the Greek in the manner that the volutes protrude from the capital, forming four corners. In both Greek and Roman, Achaemenid moldings are used in conjunction with the scrolls and are generally highly ornamented. The Corinthian is the most elaborate and highly decorated of all the orders, attaining its period of full development around the middle of the 4th century BCE. Strangely enough, the Greeks made very little use of it by comparison with other orders. However, an excellent example is the circular Coragic Monument of Lysicrates at Athens, which was erected in the year 335 BCE. But the most notable of the Corinthian temples is that of Zeus, also at Athens, the construction of which was begun in the 2nd century BCE and was completed by the Emperor Hadrian in the 2nd century CE. The Greek Corinthian column, except for its distinctive capital, is similar to the Ionic, but it's even more slender. Legend has it that the design of the beautiful capital, devised of acanthus leaves, can be attributed to Callimachus, who was a Hellenistic Greek poet and critic. This is remarkable, because his actual stock and trade was schoolteacher and library worker at Alexandria. The Romans made use of the Corinthian order in many works of imperial architecture. They gave it a special base made of carved additions to the cornice and made various innovations in the capital with more flamboyant leafage than Greek, and in some cases using human and animal figures. The Pantheon in Rome, built by Agrippa in the year 27 BCE, rebuilt by the Emperor Hadrian in the 2nd century CE, and now a Christian church, embodies the prevailing examples of this order. Hailing back momentarily to the manner in which the volutes or scrolls of the Ionic order protrude from four corners, this configuration lent itself to the addition of the acanthus leaves on the Corinthian order, and it was thus that the Romans devised the composite order as early as the 1st century CE. However, it was not until the 16th century that the codifiers actually named it composite. It has been employed extensively in public buildings worldwide. We as Freemasons are accustomed to seeing the Ionic, Doric, and Corinthian columns in a free-standing situation representing wisdom, strength, and beauty, alongside the pedestals of the principal officers, but it must be realized that columns in their normal situations as parts of buildings, as well as being aesthetically pleasing, perform a function of supporting the upper portions of the structure. These upper parts are called entablatures, and can take several forms. In a building such as the Temple of Apollo at Didyama, the long rectangular entablature is around all four sides, whereas in the Parthenon, a triangular portion is added at the front of the porchway or entrance. This triangular entablature is used where a raked roof is employed and is consistent with the roof lines. Entablatures, like columns, are divided into named parts, such as the architrave, which is directly above the columns. The portion above the architrave is called the frieze, usually ornately ornamented. Above the frieze is the cornice. In the case of a triangular portion being used, it also has named parts. The cornices completely surround the triangular facade, which is called the pediment, the upper angled cornices being referred to as raking cornices. Apart from the noble or classical orders, many adaptations and departures from orthodoxy can be observed when traveling around cities or the countryside. For instance, at the entrance to the town hall in Anguston, a town north of Adelaide, there are two pillars which look like extended Australian rules footballs topped with the volutes of the Ionic order. Also, many false columns, which are really parts of the walls, display the characteristics of the capitals of all the orders. It is also interesting to note columns or pillars derived from the architecture of countries other than Greece and Italy, such as Egypt. The sculptors of this country depicted many conventional designs inspired by such plants as palms, lotuses, and papyrus, mainly in the Ptolemaic period. The Egyptians and also the Greeks made use of caryatids, which are columns sculpted in the form of women. A wonderful example is to be viewed in the ruins of Erechtheion on the Acropolis in Athens, where the caryatid columns are completely preserved. It is interesting to note that these figures are completely clothed, but the arms are terminated above the elbows. Postscript. Since completing this article, I have seen a television program showcasing a beautiful stock exchange building in the town of Ulaanbaatar in Mongolia. Inside the building are a large number of columns, unfluted and without bases, surmounted by Corinthian capitals. This is just another of many variations which has arisen from the five noble orders. So I hope you enjoyed that deep dive into the practical knowledge of what exactly composed those five orders. That's it for this week. I know it was a little bit shorter of an episode than what we're used to, or maybe it's right on par. I'm not quite sure these days. However, I hope you enjoyed. If you like these Masonic podcasts, please check out the Masonic Roundtable Tuesday nights, 10, 9 central, and you can interact with us. We have our show topics that are posted every week on Facebook, and we go live on YouTube at 10, 9 central, again, every Tuesday. At the Midnight Freemasons, we're putting out 3 articles every single week, Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. And the Masonic Curators, if you've got a really cool video of yourself explaining one of your neat items, please send it on over. Consider submitting it to Masonic Curators. We'd love to have it on. By this time, you've seen videos by David Connolly, videos by Steve Harrison, videos by Greg Knott, videos by myself, and there will be more. So I want you guys to be a part of that and help preserve our Masonic history when it comes to some neat items that we have. Even if it's a coin or a postcard, it doesn't really matter. But let's get it out there. So I look forward to checking those out. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, feel free to email me anytime at admin@wcypodcast.com or simply just wcypodcast@gmail.com. I will always answer your emails and I will always personally respond. It does take some time sometimes, but that's the way it goes at times when, of course, we all have all our other obligations, lodge and families and things. So with all that said, I thank you very much and I look forward to talking to you all next week. Until then, stay on the level. For Whence Came You, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.